Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week News podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we're going to have a quick chat about the proposed reforms to executive compensation that are floating around in Washington these days. As I'm sure most of you have heard, the Obama administration wants to impose new regulations on executive pay packages and on companies' compensation committees. Congress is looking at doing it the same. The Securities and Exchange Commission has promised some new regulations on this front as well. We have an awful lot of traffic out there on this topic. To help us sort out which reforms are most substantive and which are going to affect the most public companies, rather than just companies receiving government bailouts or the financial sector or anyone else, we're joined by Brinkley Dickerson. He is head of the Securities and Corporate Governance Practice at the law firm of Troutman Sanders in Atlanta. Brink, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Matt.
Now, first question here. We have seen a flood of proposals coming out of Washington, some for TARP companies, some for banks, some for all public companies. Distill all this out for us into what proposals seem most significant for all public companies as a whole. You know, what are they going to have to worry about and look for?
Well, Matt, in the short term, I think it's going to be the SEC proposals. But yep, it's probably a good point of reference to take a step back and look at what Congress is looking at. We've got Chuck Schumer's Shareholder Bill of Rights Act that certainly has some traction. And last Friday, another congressman from Michigan introduced another proposal, both of which are very broad and far-reaching. But those are going to have to go through the legislative process. There'll be some agreement and compromise. And neither of them is quite as focused on executive compensation as what I think we're going to see out of the SEC. Mm-hmm. We have Mary Shapiro. She's promised that early in July the SEC is going to make a proposal on additional disclosure. And we don't know a lot of the details on it yet, but we do know that it's going to cover the topic of risk and how risk relates to compensation and how boards consider risk generally. And we also know that it's going to cover the independence of the compensation consultants that boards use.
Now, so along those lines then, is it really the board that is going to be the target of these reforms, the compensation committee? I mean, do we want them to be the ones who are stepping up to be more aggressive about risk management? Or is it, the executive ranks or somebody else who is the focus of what we're doing here?
Well, to some extent, this is going to be like the CDNA requirement. And in the CDNA requirement, we had boards who were making, you know, good, wise decisions based upon a lot of their experience, but not in a fashion that could be articulated cleanly. And the CDNA requirements essentially modified the behavior of the directors so that the disclosure ultimately was more palatable and more complementary of what they'd been doing. We're going to have the same outcome and risk. Every director walks into a boardroom with a lot of intuitive understanding of risk, understanding of the business, understanding of the decisions that could result in higher or lower returns. But they don't do it in a very formal process. We've got 13,000 public companies, and of those 13,000, only a very small number, 100 or 200, are of the nature that they have, you know, important people focusing in an infrastructure on risk management as a profession. And the rule's not going to draw that distinction. And the rule's going to say, explain to us how your board considers risk. And they're going to want to hear that from all 13,000 companies. So it is going to change behavior and maybe in some important ways.
So now let's then get to what will probably be the big worry point for compliance officers and board directors is how exactly are you supposed to quantify this sort of fabled link between executive compensation risks and long-term shareholder value? I mean, at some point, people will need to capture some sort of data and make a statement about it that goes into an annual report. But do we have a real grasp of what that language is supposed to be?
No, and this is clearly a situation where the proposed regulations go beyond the comfort zone for the theorists on executive compensation. Now, we do have people who are working in that direction, though. Watson Wyatt earlier this week produced a report in which they have come up with some recommendations based on looking at credit risk versus compensation as an indicia of risk. Others are looking at other sort of numerical analyses that, that boards could apply in a somewhat objective fashion. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the response by most companies is going to be more generalized and broader than that, and companies should not feel compelled to come up with an objective, quantifiable approach. For instance, I think we're going to see two primary changes. One is, I think we're going to see a shift in the nature of the instruments that we use for executive compensation. We're going to see options that have capped returns or something that prevents the CEO from seeing an option grant as being a grand slam home run opportunity, because that's not what the board wants to motivate in terms of behavior. We're going to see hold through retirement to some extent. We already are seeing it with directors in a lot of well-run companies. We're going to see more of that with management. The hot discussion right now is on something known as bonus banking, and it's not been widely applied. There are only a couple companies that have tried it. But in theory, you would take a portion of an executive's bonus and you would bank it on a deferred basis to make sure that the performance held up. And just using an example that I've heard, say, for instance, that the bonus was earned if the company had earnings of $50 million. And you'd take the million-dollar bonus, and as long as the company didn't lose money, it isn't that it would have to achieve $50 million in succeeding years, but as long as it didn't lose money for the next 2 or 3 years, the bonus would be paid out in due course. So I think we're going to see a little more refinement in the sorts of instruments or in the terms of the instruments that are used. I also think we're going to see a shift in instruments. Traditional complaint about options is that they're asymmetrical. There's no downside, only upside. And that's not something that you have with restricted stock. And even though it may or may not make sense to be in restricted stock, directors will perceive restricted stock as a tool that addresses the risk situation. And when they want to answer the question, how have you addressed risk, they would like to be able to say, well, we used fewer options and we used more restricted stock. And so I think we're going to see a little bit of that.
So now those all sound like good ideas, and they also sound like somewhat complicated ideas. Do you think this is going to make them rely even more on compensation consultants or those other sort of outside advisors?
Well, I think compensation consultants have a good future in front of them, and do see more use for them on a very broad basis. Mm-hmm. A couple observations on compensation consultants. I think the concern that you're seeing expressed on conflicts is grossly overblown. The simple fact is that we're not dealing with a large accounting firm office in Houston, Texas, where the dominant client was Enron. We're dealing with a compensation consulting firm with a very diverse client base for which no one client is even close to being significant. And when you have that structure, you don't get the same sort of conflict issues that you do in the accounting setting. Yet people are analogizing compensation consultants to accountants. And I think that's a bit misguided. And what that does is it prevents a company from using one compensation consulting firm from soup to nuts. And it requires the inefficiency of having a second firm just advise the board and be up to speed on the plans and programs just for that role. That said, that's where we're going. Unambiguously, the SEC wants more disclosure on the independence of compensation consultants. That will be part of the proposal, is everybody's guess. And again, disclosure begets behavior.
Let me squeak in one last question, if I can. When Sarbanes-Oxley was passed, two tons of work fell on the audit committee. Nobody wanted that job. It was rather thankless. I am wondering if we're about to see the same sort of thing fall on the compensation committee once all of this settles out.
Well, we've seen some of that already, Matt. We've watched over the last year and a half as the workload on the comp committees has grown, and I definitely think it's going to grow further. The other thing that this suggests is that companies are going to be reconsidering their mix of directors. You know, historically, it's been very easy to staff a board with some semi-retired or retired individuals who bring great wisdom and judgment to the table and certainly are valuable assets to have. But don't still have the energy to roll up their sleeves and meet with the consultants and crunch numbers in the Excel spreadsheets. I suspect that boards are going to be looking for more active, younger directors to carry some of this additional weight at the comp and audit committee levels. And over the next year, directors who, just as 2 years ago, the hottest director candidates were those people who could be audit committee financial experts, I think over the next couple of years, we're going to be keeping our eyes open for energetic people who can be the leaders in the compensation setting process.
All right. Well, Brink, you've given us plenty to think about here, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have right now. But thank you very much for speaking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
And again, everybody, that was Brink Dickerson of the law firm Troutman Sanders talking with us about Washington's proposed reforms for executive compensation. That concludes this week's podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and I hope you join us again next time.